Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. In this podcast we're going to do a talk about the subject which Pete is going to be tackling at the IYN Yoga Festival, and well, tomorrow it starts, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The IYN is the Independent Yoga Network,
mm-hmm.
and Pete is going to be doing a talk on the future of yoga. So, to start off, does yoga have a future? Oh, just for the people who are new to our channel, the reason why they're hearing footsteps and birdsong all around us is because we do these podcasts as well. We're walking the wild lands of Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
Because we find it far preferable to just sitting in a room recording stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And we're actually in
a... That's the extra, just in case you think, well, what's all that noise around them? That's what it is. So back to the topic.
Yeah, and even though we're in the city here, I'm turning round.
It is absolutely really beautiful
and
in this meadow.
I can see only one sign of civilisation, which is there's a sort of a flood lamp. Just over there between the trees. But otherwise,
we're just surrounded by grass and
it's
flowers.
It's a sort of flower meadow. It's not grazed, and it's just like a bank of just
buttercups
up the hill there. Yeah,
up the hill, yeah.
And then there are all kind of white stuff over there. That's some kind of umbelliferae.
So just setting the scene for where we are.
Yeah, it's very pretty. Strangely.
Okay,
anyway,
so back
what
to the topic
was the question?
So, does yoga have a future?
Well, yoga has been around a long time. Obviously, it depends who you ask how long, and there's this tendency to keep pushing the date further and further back.
Yeah.
You know, because there's some respectability along the lines of the popular prejudice: if it's old, it's good.
Yeah.
Which is a bit unthinking, I think, and but certainly the Yoga Sutra and Master Waraidu is related to that. He's a couple of thousand years old, you know. And people say that Patanjali, when he wrote the Yoga Sutra, was summarising the position. You know, he was summarising the research into consciousness up to that point. So there's probably another couple of thousand years before that. So it's managed to survive, you know?
Personally, I always think it will. People will wake up, whatever, no matter how suppressed or repressed they are.
But it's historically, we do find, in as much as the history can be traced, which of course is not that easy, but historically it seems that yoga has officially gone into exile and come back into favour and been pushed into exile and back. You know, its respectability in the eyes of the world seems to fluctuate. So I think it does have a future for the reason that you gave, that people will always wake up. But sometimes they wake up in circumstances or in a cultural and political and economic context that's not that favourable to them.
Yeah.
And other times conditions are favourable.
And we would hope that in the future the conditions are as favourable as possible.
Of course.
Which is why we set up the IYN, or why you set up the IYN and others, and why it's so important.
Yeah. Well,
and why it's important to keep yoga free.
Absolutely. Well, my thought about the practice of yoga, or the practices of yoga, is not only do they benefit the individual, but they benefit the wider society. And it seems to, I'm a little bit kind of messianic about yoga's power in that sense. And I sometimes say if yoga, the world doesn't get its shit together, and that means if the world doesn't get its yoga together, it's pretty well doomed on all kinds of fronts. You know, it's like the sanity, the basic sanity of yoga needs to start operating.
Yeah.
In the larger body politic, with an urgency, is my thought. And but not yoga in any kind of sectarian or dogmatic sense. I mean, there's plenty of people saying similar things about Islam or Christianity or Buddhism. In other words, institutional religions, which of course are of necessity dogmatic religions, are also claiming, you know, that they've got to convert everybody to Christianity to save the world. I don't buy that. I think dogma is the problem.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
on a phenomenological level. But yoga helps us to become familiar with consciousness, to understand consciousness to a greater and greater degree without dogma. And that is its strength, and I think that is its cultural strength. And it's precisely that strength that, I mean, the world at large, I think needs.
Absolutely.
Given the crises and the impending catastrophes, and you don't have to be any kind of conspiracy theory or doom-laden Cassandra to think these thoughts. There's no doubt about it.
No.
Ecological catastrophe.
It's all plainly obvious, unfortunately.
It's looming very, very large. And it's just global warming, you know, it's acidification of the seas, erosion of topsoil, all alongside escalating population pressure, and so on and so forth. On top of that, we have a global economic system which is just totally unstable. And more so by the minute. Obviously, the ecological crisis is deeply enmeshed with the economic crisis. I think the core of the economic crisis, I think, is the crappy nature of money.
Yeah, and in the podcast we were talking about yesterday, we were talking about the consequences of that. But also, because we were talking about Lao Tzu,
yeah,
his idea that one could extend your empathy beyond yourself and your immediate family and your immediate country to the rest of the world. And I think that yoga, the yoga being state, is probably the best chance we've got to be able to extend your empathy out to a much wider range.
Yeah.
And if the world is going to survive, we do need to care about the rest of the world.
Yeah. I mean, the other unsustainable system is what you might loosely call the cultural system. Again, it's not sustainable. And again, it's deeply enmeshed with both. The cultural crisis is enmeshed with the ecological crisis. And the economic crisis.
Yeah.
Well, they're all deeply enmeshed, but you can tease them out for purposes of talking, you know, and harnessing certain vocabularies, philosophical vocabularies, just bringing them into your service by looking at our situation under these various rubrics. So I'm seeing, to summarise that, you know, I'm seeing yoga as a hope for humanity in the situation of impending catastrophe.
Yeah.
Now, in our lifetime, there's been the rise of popularity of certain aspects of yoga in kind of many parts of the world. You know, it's certainly. Moved out from its redoubt in India, and it's now all over the world. You know, there are practitioners all over the world. You know, and practitioners of some experience. You know, and there's quite a lot of people in my generation got interested, took it up in the 60s, and there was a few people prior to that, but it's got the kind of fan base went through quite an expansion then, on the back of the hippie thing as well. You know, hippies were fascinated by anything shiny and sparkly, which means all things Indian. So they were on it pretty well straight away. But it means that by now, you know, there are people who've put 50 years of hard practicing, walking around.
Yeah.
And they know it from the inside.
Yeah.
This is the thing about it, you know, you don't really truly know it unless you know it from the inside. You can do yoga. There's such a thing as yoga scholarship, yoga studies. And you can study texts. You can study what people do. You can do anthropology on it. There's quite a lot of work going on in the universities into like an anthropological approach to the current forms of yoga, and yoga particularly in the West. And the anthropologists like to gather data and pontificate about that. I'm not very impressed with that work, I have to say, personally. I think it would be far more interesting for the yogis to put the anthropologists under the microscope than what the anthropologists have come up with putting yoga under the microscope.
Yeah.
It's thin gruel, most of it. So, yeah, recent times, yoga has gone global, which is what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Yoga's gone global. But it's also attracted the attention of the money vultures and parasites.
Yeah.
And has been commodified in the process. Yeah. Turned into something to sell. I remember the first time I caught a copy of Yoga Journal, which I think I saw it on the shelf in W.H. Smith, and thought, oh, that looks, what's that? And there were some reasonable articles by some fairly experienced people in there. But the adverts, and the bulk of the thing was adverts.
Yeah.
You see that yoga was being turned into a marketable lifestyle with accoutrements that you can spend money on. Mats, clothes, toe spacers, Tibetan bowl alarm clocks. and all kinds of ridiculous consumer items. And I suppose I'm a bit of a snob, but I think that yoga is, because of its popularity, it's also undergone a transformation into like an ersatz. An ersatz product, you know, and I use the word product advisedly. And because yogis, like all explorers of consciousness, use the body, move the body, there's been the spread of a popular understanding of yoga as an exotic aerobics that we admit has got this mysterious hinterland of mysticism and chakras and nadis and kundalini and symbolism and strangeness that few people really know about, but we kind of make a respectful nod towards that idea, meanwhile indulging in what is basically an exotic aerobics or stretch class or something like that. Now this is something that's coming home to roost in the UK with what is basically an attempt at a complete corporate takeover,
yeah,
aided and abetted by the government, of yoga by the fitness and sport and well-being industry,
yeah,
which is $1 billion industry, several billion dollar industry probably, by using kind of quasi-regulation and just the whole power of those kind of governmental corporate cabals that you get. Now I've investigated this, and I'm used to hearing about the enmeshment of government with corporations, because I'm interested in what is actually going down on this planet. And the first place you encounter this is when you start thinking about militarism and the military industrial complex, which is a $1 trillion industry, really demonstrates this complete enmeshment of corporations and government. Obviously the banking corporations sitting right square in the middle of all that, because they do all the financial side of it. I mean, Trump's cabinet's got 6 Goldman Sachs graduates on it, you know, and a couple of people from the military industrial complex. Somebody like Donald Rumsfeld, he worked for Halliburton, major seller of global arms, and became Secretary of State. You know, and they went back into the corporations when that government finished. So you have this revolving door of personnel as well.
Yeah.
Even the same fucking people. And this is Mussolini's classical fascism. Mussolini, who should know, shouldn't he? I think Mussolini might well have coined the term fascism. But he said it was, fascism, speaking way back in the 1930s, is the complete enmeshment, entanglement of government and corporate power. And you see it, where you see it when you start investigating such major matters as the world's military industrial complex. But when my instinct was telling me that a corporate rip-off of yoga was being attempted because the parasites had sniffed the money, I started investigating corporate structures and governmental relationships between various ministries and various sort of quangos, you know, quasi-government organisations or organisations that are taking government money, or organisations that are operating under government licence, and looking at how all that was tangled up. And I encountered exactly the same thing as the military-industrial complex, a complete entanglement of government and corporations. You know, and the huge multinational corporations, even with the most remote interest, are sitting by the goalposts, waiting to cream off some value. If you look at out of the fitness industry, which is the funny money is actually investing in this industry, because it might be the last thing to automate over the next 50 years. Well-being will become what you do as a citizen, because you won't have a job. You'll just attend to your well-being. Yeah, and they're waiting for it and putting money into it. And who's sitting by the goalpost there? Well, McDonald's restaurants, can you believe? Coca-Cola, can you believe? Asda, stroke Walmart.
They've all got their fingers in the well-being pie, believe it or not.
Yeah, well-being, sport, fitness, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not happy about that. And I think we have to fight back against it. And I think remembering our countercultural roots tells us at least some of what we can do about that to make sure yoga has a future. And more importantly, really, that yoga has the future that it's destined to have, in the context of impending cultural, financial, monetary, economic and ecological catastrophe. They're not helping us to save the world, basically, as yogis, by turning it into a commodity that they can sell.
No.
Out of their own adult commitment to neoliberal capitalism.
And I know it sounds like a bit dramatic and a bit too strong to say that yoga can save the world, but it actually can. Like the yoga being state, if we look at just like a few aspects of that, I mean, you're a bit less likely to be a murdering bastard if you've sunk down deeply into the yoga being state. You're a bit less likely to be, and if you do find yourself on being one of the 1%, and your government says, hey, here's an extra £1 billion. We've cut the health service down to nothing, so there's 20 million people who now don't have any health cover, but here's some money. If you're kind of deeply enmeshed in the yoga being state, you're probably going to think, nah, it's all right, let's give the money back to the people who need it. You're not going to be a greedy bastard, are you? And you're not going to be selling arms, and you're not going to be supporting bombing and genocide of other countries, because the yoga being state does not.
Yeah.
Is you just feel absolutely repelled by any of that kind of stuff.
Indeed. I'm not claiming though that is all that's required. You know, there's obviously loads and loads of
that's the beginning.
Loads and loads of practical
that's
stuff.
That's the beginning. Caring is the beginning, and then actually practical application of that care.
Yeah.
With some clarity of mind and some common sense.
That's it. There you go. Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Bernie Sanders.
One. Yeah.
No, I mean, there are practical problems, and I am a bit suspicious of reduction of humanity's ills down to psychology or down to spiritual corruption. I don't think it works like that. I don't think the practical problems ever go away.
No.
You can't say that humanity... People do say this, and they're fond of saying it, and I think it's a part of self-calming to have one little aphorism that covers all truth.
Yeah.
People feel a lot happier if they believe themselves in the possession of truth in virtue of three or four words.
Yeah.
Than if they have to do loads and loads of research and come out with something very nuanced.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Something
all the problems of humanity are spiritual ones. All the problems of humanity are problems of consciousness.
Yeah.
Not true. Humanity has practical problems. But a clarity, as you rightly said, a clarity of consciousness by a few movers and shakers. And as many movers and shakers as we can get, he's definitely going to be decisive, I would think.
And even if it was just en masse, the ordinary people, because the ordinary people have, you know, in most countries, they're able to vote. So, for instance, if everybody in Britain suddenly, the yoga being state was just illuminated inside them, I think they probably wouldn't be voting for the health service to be dismantled and for the 1% to have all the money.
No. Well, Patanjali, for one, advises the yoga practitioner against being too grasping. Aparigriha, you know, non-grasping. And yet the whole essence of capitalism is to grasp for profit.
Yeah.
You have to grasp for it. That is its sole motivation. Again, it's a reductionism, a harmful reductionism, because it says that's all that matters. The rest will flow from that.
Mm.
And no, it doesn't. It's wishful thinking. It doesn't. The rest doesn't flow from that. You know, so there's just, I mean, even if we kind of tack Patanjali as somehow authoritative, and if we take his recommendations for practitioners seriously, there is a deep incompatibility between corporatism, capitalism, and yoga, and the practices that Patanjali urges the yogi, the would-be yogi, to engage in, one of which is, like, this is non-grasping, non-stealing, non-stealing. And we have a system that's basically stealing resources, in fact, in stealing the future itself from future generations. It's deeply engaged in the robbery of future generations.
Yeah.
The whole kind of debt-based system.
Meanwhile, poisoning the planet and the air that they're going to be breathing in the future.
Well, that's another yoga virtue, if you might want to call it that. The Patanjali urges on the practitioner, if the practice is going to work, is cleanliness.
Yeah.
And that means you shouldn't be engaging in environmental pollution.
Yeah. And not poisoning yourself.
Not poisoning yourself.
Well,
you poison the planet, you poison yourself, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, with, you know, with bad diet and...
Yeah. Yeah. Things. So, I mean, there is an obvious deep incompatibility, which makes me very suspicious of Hindu nationalists who believe that Mr. Modi is the answer to the future of yoga. I kind of doubt it, because Mr. Modi is committed to corporatism and has basically given his country over to the corporates and protecting their enterprise by imposing social order through a religious fundamentalism. I think that's pretty fucking shabby.
Yeah.
And yet they claim to be the custodians of yoga. Sorry, guys, don't agree. It doesn't square. Mm. I mean, nationalism doesn't square with yoga. The yoga being state, at its very minimum, introduces a scepticism into one's sense of identity. It gets scrutinised.
Yeah.
You know, in a sceptical way. And again, that's one of Patanjali's virtues. Satya, truthfulness. Be truthful about what you find about yourself. And you'll find that you don't belong to any nation. You don't even have a self. Let alone a self that can belong to a nation or a linguistic group or an ethnic identity. So again, how can you claim that you're marshalling yoga and promoting yoga when you're actually promoting the opposite of what it entails, i.e. a very strong and fossilised and fixed sense of identity? This is a huge schism, a huge schizophrenia in the people that take this kind of line.
Yeah.
So...
It actively stops you caring about people who don't belong in your country or don't live in your country. Yeah. But not even worse than that, it creates a them and us situation where you actually start regarding them as the enemy.
Yeah, this of course aggravates the general impending catastrophe on the cultural level. Otherisation. What yoga does, it de-otherises everybody and everything.
Yeah. Because you realise that you are actually connected to everybody else.
Yeah, Don Juan and the Beatles, you know.
Yeah.
What was it you were saying about that?
After thrashing around in the desert for many, many years or a very, very long time, not knowing what on earth he was doing, he finally spends a few nights out in the desert on his own. Still feeling a bit despondent, like, well, what the hell's this? Yeah. I don't really know what I'm doing. And then he lies down, and there's a small rock by his head, and a beetle crawls on top of it and looks him in the eye. And suddenly, he has this massive consciousness shift where he realizes that he and the beetle are one.
Yeah.
Really. And I identify with this a lot because I've had this realisation myself a few times. And as we were talking about it this morning, when you actually say the sentences and the words, it doesn't really do the experience any justice at all.
It's very hard to do that experience any justice.
Yeah. But to have that experience of your consciousness expanding out. And it's like your empathy expanding out to become, you know, a global citizen, rather than.
I can imagine what the trolls will say about you. You're a feminazi, and you wish all white men were dead. You're implicit in white genocide. You know, people come out with crap like that. You know, it's why we need yoga.
Yeah. Because this is a disturbing trend which you've noticed, is there seems to be this backlash against feminism and just the simple idea that men and women should be treated equally. Did you say it was on the back of Trump? There was this
it's on the back of Trump and Brexit and so forth.
I think now that it's okay just to be crap to women again.
Well, these thoughts were there, and these tendencies were there, but they were just people didn't feel emboldened to voice them, you know. So I don't think anything's changed overnight, but there's a lot of energy going into promoting a return, you know, to the 1950s and to authoritarianism and to enforce traditional family structures and so forth. If you watch The Handmaid's Tale, it's like you think this isn't that improbable. If you actually take the trouble to listen to trolls, which is probably a bad mistake, yeah. You know, and you can get an overinflated sense of how numerous and important this is, but maybe. I'm sure in the late 1920s, you know, Nazism, as it was rising up as a fringe movement, people thought, look at these bunch of nutters, they're not going anywhere. These things can kind of catch fire, especially in times of hardship and austerity. They can catch fire. So, I think yoga's got a great role to play. And there are probably at least 1 million people regularly practicing yoga in the UK. That's not an insignificant amount of people. Maybe they're not practicing that assiduously, and maybe they're practicing some ersatz fitness aerobics, but the nature of the beast is that even a little bit of it can get you. Yeah. It can stand an enormous amount
of... Very unexpected, the spark can just leap up, can't it?
Yeah. And that's why, as much as I'm not a fan of the fitness industry, I think if yoga teachers can get in there and touch people as another area of life where they can share their being and what it is and their practices, this isn't a bad thing. What is a bad thing is the fitness industry taking over, commodifying, controlling, diluting, and so forth, all for purposes, at the end of the day, of accumulating profits.
They're just like pimping it out, basically, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, they're just doing what they do. I'm just doing my job. I've actually been told that, you know, I'm just doing my job. Why are you going at me? I'm just doing my job. And I say, well, because you're attempting to control something that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
And I, for one, I'm deeply offended by that.
Yeah. It'd be very sad fate for yoga to be turned into a commodity that has no juice anymore. That's deeply, deeply sad.
Yeah.
So, guys, let's not let this happen.
Yes.
Hey, how about that?
Let's not let it happen.
Let's have some, you know, have some strength of will,
yeah,
and say no.
I think I have a mission to make the jobbing yoga teacher realise the full extent of the responsibility they carry.
Yeah.
As jobbing yoga teachers. And I'm not saying that plenty of them don't, but I think some of them don't.
Yeah.
Plenty of them do.
Perhaps it would be just useful for them to be a bit more alert to how important it is what they're doing.
Yeah.
And what they're giving people.
Yeah.
And the ripples, yeah, of their actions that, yeah, are out into,
well,
the world.
As a part of commodification, they themselves have been told that what should concern them is their career as a yoga teacher.
Yeah.
Not what they can give, not what service they can offer, not what role they can play in saving the world, but how to improve their career prospects. Mm. So they kind of get diverted straight away from what really counts in this matter.
Yeah.
And again, this is something that the fitness industry is very keen on. And my worry is that they will attempt to take over the training of teachers, and I think something, a body like Kempsey will try and produce a chartered yoga teacher or yoga teacher trainer, something like that.
Yeah.
And it'll be done according to paradigms and formulations and structures that are actually just irrelevant to yoga.
Yeah.
Because people in those industries think yoga is a form of education, or a form of fitness, or a form of even a form of some kind of dogmatic religion.
Yeah.
We get all of these, and yoga is its own thing, and it's bigger than any of these other categories. It doesn't belong to any of them. They belong to it, but it doesn't belong to them. And yet it's been treated as a baby brother.
Yeah.
This is completely just conceptually wrong. And the juice of yoga that gets passed on to you by your teacher and that you pass on to others, the spark, as we call it, isn't commensurate with this commodification, isn't commensurate with this reduction to known disciplines by people who know nothing about it. But, you know, I take hope from the fact that in the past, the yogis had to go into the forests because the princes wanted them dead.
Yeah.
And as we know, they were rounded up and killed.
Yeah.
And then there were attempts to convert them and bring them back into orthodoxy, and programs for doing that at various stages in the deep past of yoga.
But it was basically... It was important enough to go to such lengths to try and escape... off into the forest, which it obviously wasn't an easy life, but they thought it was important enough to go and explore these things, to go and do that.
If you look in the Shiva Shamita or the Hatha Yoga Padipika, or indeed the Bhagavad Gita, Patanjali less so, but you're told, well, you want to practice yoga, you want to find out what this is about, and you want to taste this delicious state, well, go away on your own, find a nice clean hut by a place where there's some fresh and potable water, and there's not too many insects, sweep it clean, get yourself set up in there, away from people, bit of solitude, and get cracking.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that is the countercultural route of yoga. And it's not going to go away. I say that the IYN isn't going to be able to go toe-to-toe with this enormous machine. Doesn't mean to say it won't win. The Viet Cong, as I take hope from the Viet Cong, fucked off, defeated the biggest military machine that has ever existed on this planet by a long way. And blokes with rocks running around in tunnels, and women, beat them back. Yeah. But they didn't beat them back by going toe-to-toe with them. They hadn't got napalm. They hadn't got helicopter gunships. Yeah. They hadn't got rocket-propelled grenades. They hadn't got very much. So they didn't go toe-to-toe.
You're supposed to know how to
come. They used the noddle.
Yeah.
And
their underground network.
Well, they had to strategize like Taoists, really, you know. A force comes head on at you, you let it just slip to the side, you just slip it off to the side instead of meeting it head on. If you can get the bugger to trip up under his own momentum, you do so. You know, but all it requires is putting your foot out an inch so that he trips.
Yeah.
You know, you have to box really, really clever.
And also they're working together.
Yeah.
So if we could
possibly,
through this podcast, inspire more and more yogis to say no and
just say no.
Work together and to realise just how important it is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Not only personally, but if they're teaching as well, what they're giving out. And as I said, the ripples that they're sending out into the world.
Yeah, these are now small things. They're very quiet. They need much razzmatazz, but they're very powerful.
Because they can't take over if we don't let them.
No.
They can only do it with our consent, really.
Well, they'll do their thing. They'll set up their ersatz thing, probably.
If nobody buys into it, that's it.
And a few suckers who go to the gym will buy into it, and they'll get some aerobic teachers and train them up on the basis of no knowledge. And but everybody else will keep building the alternative.
Yeah.
So we have to do is keep building the alternative, but make sure that it's not like a silo, you know, that it's not a... it's not like the Jonestown cult or anything like that, where it lives in an isolated world of its own.
Yeah.
It needs to also, as well as producing its own project of building the alternative, not only does it need to do that, it needs to make sure that alternative is sending out its links and its tentacles into the wider world. It needs to do that as well. And for those tentacles to be two-way information channels. We can't lock ourselves in ashrams with no news of the outside world. We need to know the outside world. We need to know the world. We also need to be sending goods out into the world. This is what's got to happen. Yeah. And I'm confident that it will happen. Because for 2,000 years, something like that has happened.
Yeah.
You know, the counterculture of 2,500 years ago. Operated by people retreating away from the oppression of princes and caste society. And a powerful priesthood that was actually just mouthing myths and metaphysical conceits. This is Buddha, you know. Buddha was a revolutionary protester.
Yeah.
Because he said, fuck you lot.
Yeah.
You know, this metaphysics doesn't wash. You're just making it up. You don't really have any basic experience. And what's the point of just mindlessly repeating rituals and chants that make no sense, that nobody even understands anymore? What's the point of that? We have to re-existentialise it. We have to return to that hut in the forest, you know.
Yeah.
And so they did that, and it was countercultural, and they did things like they had women gurus at the time when women were thought to have no spiritual soul.
Yeah.
They had women gurus. They used hallucinogens and the ecstatic possibilities of sexuality and all kinds of stuff. They're true experimenters with consciousness, and they did that. Now, we had a counterculture in the 60s briefly. And the motto of that counterculture was, well, do your own thing, you know. Well, do your own thing is retreat to your hut and sort your consciousness out.
Yeah.
And they also had the I suppose it was the half-baked flower power idea of building the alternative society. Powers that be pretty well smashed that, you know, very quickly. And the drugs didn't help. Some of the drugs helped, but a lot of them didn't. You know, the famous Haight-Ashbury. It's 3 months of love and peace, followed by years of heroin hell.
Yeah.
So
I think the future of yoga, I believe, is in the individual yoga teacher taking responsibility for themselves, their own practice, and their own teaching, and finding an adequate space or creating a good space that's going to be nurturing and supportive for the work they want to do, and teaching on their own terms.
Yeah.
I think this is really vitally important, rather than shoehorning your yoga class into a gym or a pre-existing environment which isn't really conducive to what you want to do, or is going to limit what you want to do.
Yeah. Unless, of course, you want to take the thing into prisons, whereby you can't bring the prisoners out to your ashram.
Yeah, of course, you know, yeah.
You know, a bit of flexibility, but yeah, definitely take charge, do it.
And we've run a yoga centre in our house, really, in Wolverhampton for over 20 years now. So it can be done.
Yeah.
We've done it.
We're still here.
And then we've had hard times.
We certainly have.
You know, difficult, very difficult times to keep it afloat. Yes, you know, it hasn't all been an easy, blissful ride by any means. But that's what we were passionate about, and that's what we did.
Yeah. And you can do it too.
Yeah.
And remember, it's a key thing. If you're a teacher, a yoga teacher, inverted commas, what you have to offer is the fruits of your own practice.
Yeah, oh, and
certificates, secondary study, scholarship, are all secondary to that. They can be useful, but they're absolutely secondary.
Yeah.
What is primary is what you have experienced yourself, what you know.
Yeah.
Satya, again, it applies to teaching. An absolute ruthless truthfulness.
Yeah.
As best you can. You don't have to give yourself a hard time if you do fib to yourself now and then, because people are going to do that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, at least you have a go.
Yeah.
You have a go. That is powerful enough. You don't need to guilt trip yourself, which actually robs you of your power.
Yeah.
You just give it a stab.
Yeah.
And you work with it and you work with it. It's very rewarding, and that's what keeps you going. But also disillusioning, beware.
Yeah.
So
it's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah. But you teach what you know, and you will know more if you practice.
Yeah. And also, with practicing, it does really help if you can take yourself off for a solitary retreat. And I would not recommend a guided one. What I've done in the past is I've just rented a cottage in the Lake District, and I've just gone off, and I've just allowed things to unfold in the time frame. So the trouble with a guided thing, of course, is you've got a
there's an imposition to some extent.
There's things happening at certain times, and it's like if you're on your own, having done this out in the wild by myself, if you are on your own, that's when you're really, really face to face with yourself.
Yeah.
No routine, you know, nobody else there. You're just out in the elements with yourself.
Yeah.
And those times, even if it's just for 3 or 4 days, can be tremendously expansive. It feels like you're there for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But to have those times, I think, is very important. Just maybe having an hour or two a day, or like a few hours a week, is on the mat doing the yoga is great. But these more, but these times when you can just allow yourself without any restrictions, the timeless, just to voyage in a little bit deeper and really go for it.
Mm.
I would highly recommend that if you want to teach from your own experience, because you'll get a lot of juice from those times.
Mm.
But again, not always an easy ride.
No.
You might just spend a few days crying.
I am amazed at how much we have to kind of reiterate this truth that the basis of teaching is your own practice.
Yeah.
People think that it's about regurgitating what they got on their last certification adventure.
Yeah.
And then whilst they're planning the next one and sort of accumulating these bits of stuff to kind of regurgitate and pass on, you know.
Yeah.
This is often done in the name of humility, you know. I say, well, I'm passing on what my teacher knew because he was so much more wise than me.
Yeah.
Well, your job is to get as wise as that.
Yeah.
And have something to pass on authentically. And I just say, I'm amazed at how much we have to kind of reiterate that. And the culture, the ersatz culture that's flown out of the commodification is what's responsible for this. Not to mention all the other confusions, you know, the property of India confusion, the career of the teacher confusion, the confusion that's behind a lot of this national occupational standard and corporate rip-off uses, actually the confusion that the fitness industry cabal exploits. Is the confusion around respectability. Yoga is countercultural, it's not respectable. It shouldn't aspire to be respectable, yet it does. But it strikes me, if somebody's asking the government for permission to teach yoga, if they're seeking for some higher authority somewhere outside of themselves or outside of the immediate the immediate yoga community, that they are actually demonstrating their lack of confidence in what they know.
Yeah.
And you don't have that lack of confidence in what you know if you've had the powerful experiences of the yoga beings. That you don't have that.
No.
You know what you know.
Yeah.
And again, that's another part of the confusion. But I am optimistic. Yoga's lasted this time, and there's a lot of great people out there who understand a lot of this stuff and they're doing it. And I think that power of what people like that are doing in letting yoga quietly flow out as an antibody into the body politic, as an antibody against all the impending catastrophes.
Yeah.
Would be that power would be 1,000 times more intense and efficacious if all of those people are able to act roughly in accord, which is what the idea of the independent yoga network, there is a truism underneath the independent yoga network, which again isn't realised given the solitary nature of A, being a yoga practitioner, and B, being a yoga teacher. And it's that groups of people can do things that lone individuals can't.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm prepared to admit that certain powerful lone individuals do change the world, but so do groups acting in accord. And I would like the yoga teachers, who understand that yoga needs to be based in practice, that yoga is countercultural, it doesn't need permission from the government, those people, I want them to work together. Yeah. At least to be focusing their energy in more or less the same direction. Then something will happen. Because groups can do stuff.
Yeah. That certainly is
a lot of major,
the best future.
Yeah. So that was my thought there. But of course they take a bit of persuading because they're in this sort of petty bourgeois position economically.
Yeah.
Of being like lone sole traders, lone teachers, and practitioners who are going to spend a lot of their practicing time on their own. You know, trade unions are able to do stuff through collective action because everybody's thrown together in the place of work.
Yeah.
And the situation in yoga is a bit different.
Well, I suppose this is where we had an idea that perhaps an IYN conference about the future of yoga might be something that could be on the cards in the future, and bring in yogis together to talk about this very subject.
Yeah.
It's been thought about, hasn't it?
And yeah, it's been thought about.
Could be quite a useful tool.
Somebody with some organising ability.
Future positive change.
Can have a nice little project.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's me. I don't have any organising ability. I'm just really good at talking bollocks, you know. And
So I hope you found that useful. A beautiful day here still. Birds are still singing away. Life goes on. And I will speak to you soon.